Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting,
lightsaber clashing,
the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping,
banshee flying,
space mountain launching,
galaxy rewinding,
what is the whole network galaxy rewinding,
fireworks igniting,
world of other worlds, for whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.
Welcome to the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Thomas, doing the show solo tonight, and an awesome one at the same time. Micah and Andy wish they could have been here. Andy ended up running into some, he was up in the city and it took longer than he thought. And then, honestly, I've been having internet problems and Micah couldn't make it in person and it was just going to be a pain in the butt, so I told him not to worry about it. So I'm solo tonight. Even though both guys wanted to be here to listen to this awesome Tales of the Chase episode, we have Joel and his daughter Anna Budnick on from Wentzville, Missouri. Anna is the first ever female to kill an elk in Missouri since the reintroduction and the new elk seasons that started 5 years ago or so. First female to ever do it. And she comes on, tells the story about all of it from... you know, her upbringing in hunting to finding out how she got, or finding out she got drawn to getting ready for it through the hunt. So she does a great job. Her and her dad do a great job telling the story, and it's enjoyable. I also heard the story for the first time right along with you guys as you're listening to this, and that's kind of some of my favorite ones. A lot of times I already know the story for the most part, just because you talk to people and you hear it, but this one I didn't, so I'm glad I didn't. It was a good story to hear. Let's do some sponsors before we get into today's show. Let's start with Habitat Works, our buddy Dustin Williams. Give him a call at 816-752-7390. Mention us when you call. Get 15% off any service. Or shoot him an email, habitatworksllc@gmail.com. Dustin is a wealth of knowledge when it comes to mapping and planning, forestry mulching, TSI, you name it. He knows how to do it. Zamberland Boots, ZamberlandUSA.com. Check them out. Get you a pair of boots that, well, and like this case, is important when you're out hunting elk. Huntworth Gear. Use our code MWW15 for 15% off any order. Check out their website. They have sales all the time. They're great with their customers as it relates to that. Heat Boost is already affordable. If you can get it for 15% off, do that. Alps Outdoors, use our code 2024 Woods Water for 30% off. Alps Outdoors makes all kinds of awesome stuff like packs. The Elite Pack, when it comes to elk hunting, is awesome. That's what I used in Wyoming last year. And Micah and Andy, I believe, used in Colorado this year. So they make a little bit of everything. Whitetail packs, elk hunting packs, western packs, tents, tri-leg stools. We've talked about a million times. You name it, they got it. Check them out. Reveal cameras by Tacticam. Easy to use, easy to set up. Can't really say much more about them. There's been nothing about the cameras that have been hard for me to figure out. And I can get confused. So that's saying a lot. OnX, we talk about OnX in the show. Use our code MWW20 for 20% off. Got to go to the website to do it. Excuse me. I know I've said it a million times, but that's how it is, how you're able to save 20%. And Anna and her dad got on OnX this summer to do some scouting. Black Ovis, I can't remember if I said that already, but I don't think I did. Use the code MWW10 for 10% off. Check out Black Ovis's lifestyle clothing. To me, they've got some really spiffy stuff that you can wear to church or wherever you're going, and out if you want to. So check out Black Ovis. Camo Fire, download the app. Find that daily deal. I was going to get on it today and just see what we got, because it's actually been a few days since I've got on it, because I don't know. It's been a busy freaking week, month, whatever you want to call it. So I haven't had time to really look at it, and I haven't been on it lately. So check them out. It's an awesome app, and you know, find that deal that works for you. And then last but not least, Athlon Optics. Find a dealer near you. We know two awesome dealers. There's all kinds of awesome dealers out there, but we got LeBeau Armory and Explicit Outdoors in our general area that are awesome dealers. So get a hold of them. If you can't figure it out, get a hold of us. We'll get you in contact with them. And let us know what your favorite scope that they have is. I'm actually getting a pair of binoculars from them for the first time and looking forward to it. So check them out. That is our sponsors. We really appreciate them. They help us get this show produced and all that stuff. I also want to do a little quick housekeeping before we jump into the show. Make sure you check out our YouTube. We're trying to kind of grow that side of everything. All of our shows are now going to be on YouTube as well as all of our podcast platforms. So check out our YouTube. It's Missouri Woods and Water. Like and subscribe, or subscribe. I don't know all the terminology. Check it out. If you want to watch my ugly ass talk, you can do that. Go give us a 5-star review on your podcasting platform. Follow us on the social media, Missouri Woods and Water Podcast on Facebook, not Missouri Woods and Water. That's the hacked one. So Missouri Woods and Water Podcast, and then Instagram at Missouri Woods and Water. Check us out. Give us follows. That way we can interact with more of you as best we can. And then don't forget, we have a website too, MissouriWoodsAndWater.com. You can see all of our partner discount codes, some of our gear lists that we're trying to build. Not doing a great job at it, but we're getting there. And you know, just interact with us. You know, we like hearing from our listeners, talking to you guys, talking hunting. I've got like 3 or 4 different emails that I need to respond to, with some questions, and I love it. It's cool. So, anyway, I think that's it. Let's get into our show with Joel and Anna Budnick. Tales of the Chase, first female elk slayer in Missouri. This is the Missouri Woods and Water Podcast. Okay, with me tonight, I've got, I think, our first ever father-daughter duo on the show, but we've got Joel and Anna Budnick from the St. Louis side of the state, I know, but how's it going, guys?
Good.
Good, how are you?
I'm doing awesome. I'm excited to hear a story that I have. All I know is the end result. I don't know anything else. So I'm hearing this for the first time, just like the listener is, so I'm excited about. You know, when I get to do Tales of the Chase episodes where, you know, I don't know a lot about it, it's probably some of my favorite ones to do. So I'm excited. Mm-hmm. Before we get into the show today, let's do some introductions. So why don't you guys introduce yourselves to everybody, where you're from, and then we'll get into, like, hunting background after that. But Joel, why don't you go first, and then your daughter can.
All right. Yeah. Joel Budnick. Right now we live in Wentzville. I grew up in small town of Herman, which a lot of people probably know about because of the wineries and everything.
But, yep.
Grew up there. So, yep.
How about you, Anna?
Yep. And I'm Anna Budnick. I also live in Wentzville, Missouri, but I go to school out in St. Peter's, Missouri.
What college is that?
That's St. Charles Community College.
Gotcha. Okay. Obviously, I've been over to the St. Louis side of the state many a times. I used to work there all the time, but I still don't know all the colleges. I know, like, the big ones, like SLU and, you know, the ones downtown, but yeah. I don't know anything else about the ones over there. So that's cool. So, okay, so I got to ask, because for the listener, Anna is 20 years old. Anna is the first ever female to kill an elk in Missouri since the reintroduction of the herd. You know, some time ago, and that in and of itself is cool. And then she can't even gamble yet. Like, she's only 20 years old. So, I immediately, when I heard about this, kind of thought about, like, I wonder what her background is. Did she grow up hunting? You know, what's the background? So, Joel, did you grow up hunting? And then Anna, let's get into, like, your childhood, which I know a little bit now before we, recorded, but, like, what's the background with your guys' hunting, life?
Yeah, so I definitely grew up hunting. My dad and his brothers and my family all have hunted for as long as I know about. But yeah, I started hunting when I was pretty young, I guess probably 13, when we were allowed to start hunting for deer and everything. I of course, shot BB guns and stuff when I was smaller. But,
right.
But yeah, so I've been hunting since then. And yeah, it's just been a family tradition. Deer season's always been big, and getting together with family and going out and hunting and having a good time at deer camp and things like that. So,
yeah. So is deer the main thing that you hunt? Do you have any other outdoor things you do, or is deer the center of it?
Yeah, I've done mostly deer and turkey hunting. And then when I was younger, I did more rabbit and squirrel and all the other smaller game, but yeah, mostly deer and turkey these days.
Right. All right, Anna, how about you now? You're going to have to go way back in your memory book, you know, 3 years ago. but what was your, like, childhood like with hunting and your dad being, you know, a pretty avid hunter?
Yeah, so I think I was probably like 9 or 10. I started going out hunting with him, and me and my older sister would always sit with him when we were small enough to fit 3 of us in a stand.
Yep.
But then around like 13, I think it was, I also started hunting, and that was my first year I actually got that 8-pointer behind us, and that was a fun story in itself. But right. Yeah, then after that I just kept hunting, so it's been about 7 years now for hunting.
Yeah, that's awesome. So you guys don't know me obviously yet, but I kind of, sounds like Joel, you did the same thing with your kids as I do with my boys. I have a 17-year-old daughter. Unfortunately, she has no interest in killing animals. So that hurts a little bit, but hey, I'm going to stay on her. But my sons, all three of them, I made them go hunting with me before they became the hunter for a few years.
Right.
I don't know why. I just kind of thought, you know, what's the rush? We're not, you know, in a rush to get something killed. Let's just go sit with dad, see what it's like to, you know, kill a deer, see what it's like to have blood on the ground, to gut one, and then we can worry about, you know, them killing one. Is that how you just, I mean, is that just, did you make a conscious decision to do that, Joel, or just, I don't know, it's just what happened. They went with me, and then I finally started putting the gun in their hand.
Yeah, I think a little bit of both. I think just kind of felt they were pretty young and small, and just, you know, I didn't quite think they were ready till they were a little older. And yeah, I think they weren't quite ready to start shooting guns, I don't think, until she was about that age. So
yeah,
you know, just getting out and practicing with the gun before she went. And yeah, I think just wait till she was comfortable doing it. And
right.
And my youngest daughter also started hunting, and she started around the same age. So she might have started like a year sooner just because we had her own property by that point, and she was able to practice a little more. So
yeah, the younger ones do get a little bit of a benefit. Like, you know, my oldest son, he's griping because my youngest son is already getting to hunt, and he's 7. And he's like, I didn't get to try to kill a deer when I was 7. I'm like, ah, well, sucks to be you, I guess. But, you know, it is what it is. So that's really cool. You know, so for your background here, I didn't grow up hunting. I grew up fishing and camping with my dad. But I didn't grow up hunting, so it was something I didn't get into until I was in college when I started dating my now wife. And, you know, so I didn't have that kind of upbringing where my dad showed me the ropes with hunting. I learned from my brother-in-laws, Jeff being one of them, and he took me on my first ever hunt ever. It was a turkey hunt. So, you know, but I'm hoping to you know, do that with my sons, get them in the hunting world, which we have been now, and you know, they've killed their first deer, they've done some cool things. So it's cool to see what they're going to do with their boys and girls, you know, whenever they have them, you know, in the next, I guess, decade or more, hopefully. But yeah, so yeah. Okay, so let's talk about the elk draw. So have you guys been putting in for it since the beginning, or, you know, kind of what was your thought when they first said, hey, we're going to open an elk season up in Missouri? What did you start doing?
Yeah, I know he was very excited when they first opened it up, and I was just of course, excited too, but I wasn't sure if it was something I would want to do. But I know, like, we kept putting my name in too since it opened up back then, and I think my little sister's name has also been in that whole time.
Well, I think she started just like a year or two ago, but we started putting ours in the first year, I think in 2000 or whatever the first year was. I think it was 2000, but yeah, we've had our names in, just Anna and I. And then I think this past year might've been the first year we put the youngest daughters in, but
yeah,
just cause she was kind of not just trying to get into hunting. And
I don't want to let the cat out of the bag, but it's actually, your odds are getting better every year because less people are putting in. You know, the first year, I think there were like 50,000 applicants for 5 tags. Mm-hmm. Don't quote me on that, but it was a lot. And even the next year, it dropped dramatically. And, you know, 5 years later, I don't think there's near as many tags being applied for. So, you know, get your odds a little better. I'll wrap myself out a little bit. I've been putting in every year as well. This year, I missed the deadline, so I didn't even get a chance. I forgot about it.
Yeah.
I got a lot going on in May. It's not a great time for me to be putting tags in, but So, okay, so you put in, we have had, gosh, 4 different guys on that have killed elk in Missouri. And I love this part of the question, the story, because, you know, when it first happened, like, they made a big deal about it. Who drew, you know, the MDC and the state. Doesn't seem to be, you know, they're not, you know, doing as much pomp and circumstance, but how did you guys find out? Anna, how did you find out you drew? Was it a phone call, or did you just see on the app that you got it?
Well, he seen on the app kind of, I guess it was probably the night they came out because he was so excited to check. And I had forgotten that it was that night, so I didn't look yet. But come the next morning, we were actually at our property, and he comes in, like, as soon as I woke up, And I think I'd gone out and taken the dog out, and he was just standing there. I knew there was something was up. And he looked at me, and he was like, "You drew one of the elk tags." I didn't believe him at all. I was like, "There's no way. There's right. no way." But then he showed me on the app. My name was drawn. Yeah, and
so successful right there.
Yeah. And that's it cool. was so crazy.
So did you ever talk to anybody from MDC about the draw? Like, did anybody reach out, or how did that work? I'm always curious with these.
Yeah, they did reach out. I think I got an email shortly after, like, my name was drawn. Mm-hmm. I think from
Aaron. Aaron Gilbert, I think, is the...
Yeah. Oh, Aaron. Yeah, yeah, we've had him on the show. Yep.
Both of us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. We actually had Aaron on when they first were going to do the elk season, and we talked about, I don't know, it's been 5 years ago almost, but, he's a good guy, but, it's cool because... You know, I had a good buddy on our show. He drew a New Mexico elk tag this year. That's a very sought after tag. And, you know, it was just an email, you know, oh, you're successful, you know. But in Missouri, with only five tags being allotted right now, you know, they were calling people and, you know, that sort of stuff. And so you always wonder, like, eventually someone's going to put in that isn't going to use it. And it's going to be like, will they open that tag back up? You know, how that's going to work because,
we do wonder sometimes if everybody bought a tag this year, we're not sure, but.
Right. Exactly. So, excuse me. So, okay. So you drew the tag. What started going through your guys' heads right away? So obviously there is a archery season and a rifle season. Did you guys immediately circle archery season? Like, hey, we're going archery first. We'll worry about rifle if we need to. Like, what was your thought process kind of right off the bat?
Well, immediately I was just thinking, I've never done an archery season before. I've never done the bow season for deer hunting. So this was just going to be a completely new experience just in general with elk hunting and with the archery season. So I was excited to try it out, but I wasn't sure how much time I would be able to put into the archery season. I wasn't sure because we found out, I think, in late June. So it was just
July, but
so early. But
it was,
so you had like 2 months, basically.
And she knew she was going to be in classes still with college going on during the archery season. So we weren't sure how we're going to swing it. But I think she was also just like, once she realized she was drawn, like, a little overwhelmed, like she said, none of us have ever elk hunted, and then just, you know, the fact that she had never done archery season, she's kind of like, what did I get myself into?
What did I do?
What are we doing? What are we going to do? How are we going to do this? It's not going to be like deer season. We just go sit out in your stand, you know, it's going to be a lot different. So we started kind of talking about that, and like,
and it was a lot of, I was looking up like all the past hunts, and I just went through and looked up as much as I could about elk and elk hunting, and just trying to learn as much as I could before October.
Yep.
And just trying to get ready for the archery season.
Elk hunting is a lot like turkey hunting. You know, you call to them and they hopefully come to you. So I'm guessing, Dad, you were like, probably, I can imagine if my daughter or son drew that tag, I would be like doing everything. Especially, it sounds like Anna's pretty busy with college and things like that. So, you killed the elk with it's no secret, there's a dead elk in this story. You killed it with a crossbow. Did you already have one, or did you have to go out and buy one? Like, what was the whole setup with that?
So I didn't have one, and we don't actually have one at all, but my uncle has one. Mm-hmm. So I ended up asking if I could borrow his, and he did let me borrow that one. So yeah, he has a super nice crossbow, and so that's what he let me use and practice with.
Shout out to Uncle right there. Awesome.
Definitely. It was a big help for sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She got him plenty of time to practice it.
Yeah. And that,
couple months before
she, so. That was one of the questions I was going to ask is, you know, I knew it was a crossbow. You know, had you been archery hunting deer before? Sounds like you hadn't. You had been a rifle, you know, season gal. And so I think that's a really smart choice because you know, to go from zero to compound right off the bat, that would have been a lot going on. You know, I think that would have been a little bit overwhelming. And not that the crossbow is, you know, easier, I guess, you know, easier to maybe shoot. But it was the right choice to go with that first step. You know, like my sons, none of them shoot with a compound bow yet. They're all shooting crossbows. Yeah. Because it's kind of like that natural first step, you know. Now, I would not be surprised if in 2 years I don't talk to you and you're shooting a compound bow and you're ate up with archery. Yeah. I would not be surprised.
It's something I would like to learn for sure. But, yeah, I didn't think in a couple months then.
Bad idea. Yeah, bad idea.
Yeah, compound bow seemed like a bad choice.
For sure. So, okay, so you got the crossbow. Joel, did you, like, go out and buy a bunch of culls, do, like, you know, research on bugling? Like, what did you do with that?
Yeah, so we did well, you know, I'll back up a little bit. We did, like she said, we kind of had looked at some of the past elk hunts and stuff, and we ended up on one of the Facebook pages, one of the past elk hunters had reached out to us and just introduced himself. And, you know, we called, had a couple conversations with him on the phone, just talked about the calls and stuff. So, yeah, we kind of got an idea from him, what, you know, which some of the calls to try out. And so we did get some calls pretty quick in the process. And,
yep.
And she started practicing with those. And, yeah, so yeah, we weren't sure exactly which calls would work best for Missouri elk and, you know, or any elk in general, but yeah, yep. So we got some good ideas and end up with both a cow call and a bugle call.
Yep.
Both worked pretty well. So
let's see, we're 5 years into the elk season. So that means there's been 25 tags. That means there's 24 other people that have drawn outside of you, Anna. And I'm going to guess that you talked to Gene Gilkey. No,
I don't know. No, I think he was on the Facebook.
Yeah,
page,
he's still pretty active in that world.
Yeah, his name was on it, and I think he posted some things after she got her elk. But you know, I think it was Mike Ellison.
Okay, yeah,
he was the first guy to get a elk with a bow in Missouri back in, I think it was 2021. But yeah, he was one of the ones we talked with a lot, and then a couple of others that hunted the past couple of years too. So
nice. So, okay, you guys are up near St. Louis, Wentzville, just west of St. Louis, if I remember correctly. And so you're like at least, what are you, 4 hours from where the elk are?
Well, we actually have a property in Reynolds County, so we actually do have a property in one of the counties where the elk are. Our property's a little north of where the elk currently are. They haven't made it up north, as far north as our property is in Reynolds County, but we do have a place to stay there, so... So that helped us out a lot by being able to drive there. It's about a 2.5 hour drive.
Oh, okay. That's not that bad.
Property
yeah.
From our property to where the elk were is only about a 30 minute drive. So.
So did you guys make trips down there and like do some scouting, try to figure out, hey, you know, where are we going to go? How are we going to get access? If it's, you know, cause there's like, I know Gene, I'm pretty sure killed his on private ground, permission with, you know, from landowners. Obviously, there's a lot of public ground there in those counties.
Yeah.
What did you start doing? Did you just start kind of talking to folks and seeing, you know, hey, what pattern do they have in October? Where are they usually at? You know, what are we going to try to do? How did you kind of navigate that?
Yeah, kind of the first thing we did is after we talked with a couple of the people from the Facebook group and then Mike Ellison, they kind of gave us some more tips of like better areas to look. And then we also got the Onyx app and we just kind of looked at this huge area and decided where we wanted to scout. And we spent, I think like all of September and October, pretty much every weekend we were down there scouting and just testing out different areas. And we pretty much stayed on, well, I guess we did stay on all public land.
Yeah. And we were, like she said, we were down there a lot of weekends in those months and we saw elk or elk sign almost everywhere we went. You know, we tried different public lands along the Current River and, you know, around Peck Ranch and, and then, you know, other places. And then we saw elk sign and we ran into some elk just random places, but yeah, it was definitely, you know, kind of just a learning experience to just drive around. And we definitely got in some backwoods areas for sure.
Yep. That's definitely, I mean, they're going to be there, right? I mean, that's, I can't remember, what is the herd estimated to be around What is it? Is it about 500 now, or is it even higher?
I think it's about 300 now.
300,
I think.
Okay.
The last numbers we saw, 300 some. I think maybe getting close to 400, but I'm not sure what the official count is, but they're not quite to 500 yet.
Yeah, so it's kind of like one of them deals where you're like, I mean, they're down there. This is the only area in Missouri they are right now, but there's only 300 of them, you know? And 300 elk are big. You know, elk are not small, but there's only 300 of them, and this is a big area. So it can be a little daunting for sure, you know.
Yeah, you think three counties doesn't sound that big, but then when you look at how much public land there is in those three counties alone, and which is why they introduced them down there, you know, there's just a lot of places to cover for sure.
Yeah, and then of course you can't hunt in Peck Ranch, which sucks because they're always there. But
And we did drive through there, and we had driven through there before in the past just to.
Oh yeah, it's gorgeous.
We get a few there, really the you know. We didn't see as many on Peck Ranch when we were scouting as we did some of the other places.
Well, that's good. That's what you wanted.
We didn't spend a ton of time at
Peck Ranch. Yeah, we didn't. We just kind of drove through there.
Because they were thinking, we can't hunt here anyway. Right. So.
Yeah. It's just kind of cool to drive through there. I mean, every time I've been through Peck Ranch, it's been in the summertime, and they're just hanging out there, you know.
Yeah.
And it's pretty cool. But okay, so you got your uncle's crossbow. Shout out to uncle instead of making your dad spin. You know, $1,000, whatever it would have been on a new one. And you got some calls. Did you guys get, you know, packs and everything? Like, what did you do on packs? Did you guys get packs that were going to be capable of packing meat out, or what did you guys think about you were going to do there?
Well, we did start to plan for that. We got some game bags, and we both had our own hunting bags with us. But, well, I guess he had the big backpack with him, and I didn't have one because I was focused on carrying the crossbow and some of our other stuff. But, yeah, I think had we had to pack it out, we would have been taking a bunch of trips. And we didn't have, we had a plan for it, but we didn't have a ton of great gear for it, I guess, if we would have just been taking a lot of trips.
Well, was it just you two?
It was
most
just us
it,
two
yeah.
during the hunt. My brother we brought the crossbow from. He came and kind of hung out in the area that weekend of the hunt, but, you know, he was kind of around. But, we were the one.
I'm here to tell you, it don't matter if both of you had meat packing packs, you still would have been taking multiple trips just with two of you. I know, three of us packed a small bull off of a Colorado mountain, and it took everything in our bodies to get that done. And that was just a small bull, and it took three, you know, grown men. So, you would not have gotten, you would have taken at least two trips in there to get it out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Definitely,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. Okay, so, you know, you're kind of scrambling to get gear because I'm guessing, when you guys are doing your hunting back at home during Missouri rifle season, like you said, Joel, you're sitting. You're not walking through the bush. You're not through the woods. You know, so, you start thinking about all these little things, like a pack, like your boots. I can't just wear rubber boots. I got to actually get some boots that I can hike in. What about my clothing? What am I going to wear if it's cold, if it's warm? We're going to be walking a lot. So
if
you're not even just thinking about hunting, it's all the stuff around it that you have to also think about.
A lot goes into it.
I'm guessing the money that was spent on getting ready for the hunt, you know, was you know, a lot more than anything else you're going to spend on the elk itself, including the mount probably, you know. For sure. So, okay. So season opened October 15th. Is that right?
I think it was October 19th.
Okay.
Whatever that Saturday would have been, around October 19th.
Okay. So it's the Saturday then. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know the first year, I thought the first year was like the 15th or the 25th, but then I knew it rotated around that third Saturday or whatever in October.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I think it was sometime around there.
Yeah, I think it might have been the 19th. But
did you guys start day one? Like, what happened? Did you guys go down there day one and start hunting?
Yeah, we went down there kind of the Friday before just to do one more quick round of scouting and just kind of
see if we could see some elk.
See if we seen elk, see if we kind of had a better idea of where we wanted to sit opening morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Saturday opening morning, we just got right out there.
Now, this is still a bull-only tag, correct?
Yeah.
That's what I thought. Okay. So, 300 elk turn into about 115, probably, 125, 150. Even gets harder when you think about it that way.
But here, those are mature bulls. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Some of them are spikes, some of them are just, raghorns, that sort of stuff. So,
Which is mostly what we saw when we were scouting with some of the smaller ones. We saw a couple of decent bulls the weekend or two before season started, but it was, we saw more cows and more smaller young bucks, bulls,
right.
Before season, but
makes sense. Okay. So opening morning, did you sleep Friday night is what I have to ask.
Barely. We got to bed super late anyway.
Yeah.
And then we got up so early, we probably got like 2 or 3 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
Maybe four. It was
definitely not much sleep in that
night.
That'd have been difficult. Yeah. Okay. So opening morning, you get up and just kind of start talking about, like, I don't know how many, this is where, like I said, I don't know any of the story. So I don't know how many hunts you went on. I don't know what day he was killed. I don't know any of it. Kind of start talking about, your first day, and then we'll just kind of move from there and get into the day that he's dead.
Yeah. So that Saturday opening morning, we went out and we kind of had our own, we kind of picked out an area the night before, like where we were going to set up. And so we got set up there pretty early in the morning. And so I started doing some calls, and then a bull did answer back to me, but it was pretty far off in the distance. So we were like, okay, well, he's not coming any closer. I tried a couple more calls. So we decided, all right, we're going to try to sneak up on this bull. And so we walked probably a good mile or more, and then still calling, up and down hills and going towards this bull. And we got pretty close. Like, we were very close, but we set up again to try to get him to come in, and he still wanted and still wanted. And so we gave it some time and tried getting a little closer still. And we did end up seeing a couple elk that morning. I think we seen like a young cow and young bull, mm-hmm. but we never got close enough to the big one.
Yeah, they were kind of at the edge of the herd with the set that bull was in, and he was bugling a lot. And we were like basically one ridge over from him where he was doing all the bugling. And we couldn't get any closer without them spooking out of there. So
yeah, the herd was your problem, not so much him, but
yeah.
the rest
yeah,
of them.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which, mm-hmm. that'll yeah. happen. Seeing elk, yeah. though, seeing elk is a win. You saw elk day one, I can't believe I just saw this, that to me is always a big win, just seeing elk in the first place. So did you guys hunt all day? Like, did you back out and go get lunch and then go back out in the evening, or how'd you guys hunt?
Yeah, we took a pretty quick break for lunch, really, but we ended up going back to our farm to eat, so it took a decent amount of time to drive there and back. But then we got back out at a decent time that afternoon, probably 1 or 2. Mm-hmm. And then spent that whole evening hunting, and we did end up seeing the whole herd that night. So that was a fun hunt too. And that evening we got set up where that kind of the same place we ended that morning, in hopes that the herd had just kind of bedded down that day. So we set up there, and then we sat there for probably, a couple hours, didn't really see or hear much. But then come kind of evening time, the sun was starting to go down a little bit, and then we hear that cow, or not that cow, that bull bugling again, and we could tell the whole herd was coming our way this time.
Yeah, we kind of got set up, we kind of knew where they had bedded down that morning, because he was bugling a lot that morning, and they kind of stopped in one spot, like I said, about a ridge over from where we were that morning. And then, so that evening we tried to get kind of between them and where they kind of came from that morning. So we were hoping they'd go back the same way that they came from that evening. We got kind of set up on that ridge, and he was bugling like crazy as evening started to set. And then they started kind of coming our way. And I'll let Anna tell more about that.
Was it a pretty warm day?
It was. That whole weekend was over.
It's been a hot year. I mean, before, you know, lately. So I couldn't remember. We had one little cold snap right there somewhere in October, but I couldn't remember exactly when it was.
I think that week before the season, it was like it got down into the low 20s and they had a pretty good frost under that week before the season, but then it rose back up to the 70s
back up there.
Weekend. Warm nights and warm days, unfortunately. I think, you know, we were out there, like I said, several weeks before that, and we weren't hearing any bugling until about the first week of October, or maybe the second week of October. We start hearing some bugling. We weren't hearing anything in September, you know, and everything we're reading said they should be bugling in September, but it was just so warm of a fall. I think they were kind of delayed on their on their activities. So
Okay, so you're set up in the evening and you've got the herd coming your direction, which that's cool. That's got to be fun.
Yeah.
A little bit stressful, but still fun.
Yeah.
Cool experience for sure. Yeah. It was, man, probably a herd of about 25 cows and two very good sized bulls, definitely two very mature bulls. But the herd was coming in so fast and we were pretty out in the open. So we were trying to be a little concealed, but we didn't get up in a great spot because the herd kind of came in from a different side than we were expecting. So the cows could immediately see us. And so we were trying to be so still, but the herd kept going past us. But then I could never get a shot at either of the bulls because there were so many cows. It was like the bulls were hiding behind the cows.
And there was a lot of thick brush where the bulls were. They kind of stayed in the brush and kind of
they never stopped moving, I guess. Yeah,
kind of kept bull was busy chasing the other ones around, chasing the other bull around, and it just kind of there was constant movement through the brush, but definitely saw some nice bulls at him.
Some chaos. And like you said, they probably knew you were there and just kind of kept you at arm's length and, you know, didn't perceive you as much of a threat.
Some of the cows probably got within 25 yards of us and kind of out in the open, but they didn't really, I don't think they really ran from seeing us or anything. I think I think the bull just kind of like took his herd and took them a different direction. So.
Yeah. That's cool as heck. I mean, that's a great first day though. Like, golly.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Just seeing that many elk in one day. Yeah. We couldn't have asked for much better.
Yeah. Seeing all those elk and then hearing them bugle so close. It was just quite a sound. Something never experienced before. And it's like so loud right there by you.
And that was the most bugling we'd heard that whole weekend.
Yeah. You feel it in your chest. Like that sound is, something I'll never forget is the first time I had a bull bugle near me. And I don't know. It's just, it's interest, the power that comes behind that sound, especially if you see the bull and see how large that thing is, it's just beyond me, you know? So, okay. Day one, chalk it up as a success. Didn't quite get to let an arrow fly, but it was successful.
For sure.
Day two, I'm assuming you went back out Sunday.
Late night, we again didn't get too much sleep that night, but Sunday morning we got back out there bright and early. We kind of went to the same area, but on our drive in, we actually scared away a pretty decent sized bull. So immediately we were like, well, this might not work out great, but we still went out to the same area we were planning on, and we sat out there for a while, but we ended up not seeing any elk that morning, and we just seen one doe, I think.
We did hear the bugle, but it sounded like the herd that we had seen the day before, the bugles were coming from probably a mile or two away from us. You know, we could tell they had moved overnight. They moved a different direction. And they were pretty far away, but he was bugling a lot still, just off in the distance.
Yeah, they can cover ground. That is no doubt.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So a little bit more of the same. You guys went back for lunch, went to the farm for lunch, I'm assuming, and then back for the evening.
This day, I was thinking that Monday and Tuesday, I was actually going to have to skip the hunts and go back to school. And then the rest of that week, I was planning on taking off Wednesday through Sunday and just focusing on hunting the rest of the week. So that Sunday, I just decided, kind of a split second decision, like, we're just going to stay and we're going to try one more hunt. So we didn't really even take that big of a break. We maybe took like a 45-minute break and went back out to hunt around like 11. And I think But then we decided we're going to change areas because we could hear the elk bugling off in the distance, but not in the area we were at earlier. So we kind of had to find some new roads to get up to this area. And then we got some tips from some of the other guys in the area of like some other different roads we could take to get to this public land. And then that was kind of all up in this area that we heard the elk bugling.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. And those guys had told us in the past, you know, that sometimes that the bulls, if they have their herd with them in the middle of the day like that, sometimes you can call them and bugle them off of their herd. They might, you know, if you kind of walk in and act like you're a bull coming into their herd, they might get agitated and come out to check you out. And, you know, so that's kind of what we were thinking we would try, since he was still bugling in the late morning like that. We thought we'd just try to get up in there, but
yeah.
Yeah, get some of that midday madness, as they say. Midday madness.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we ended up going up to this new area, still on public land, and we had barely gotten out of the car or getting our stuff on, and we start walking, and I was just like, I'll just try one bugle call, because we heard an elk bugling off to our left and our right, and they both sounded pretty decent, and we thought the one off to our left was like a little smaller maybe, but I just thought I'd give a bugle call to try, and little do we know, this bull down to our left gets mad and like starts bugling right back at us. Mm-hmm. And it was clear that he was going to be able to, he wanted to come in. Like, for sure. But he was still pretty far out there. So we were just like, he might not come in. So we kept going and trying to get up to this little clearing we seen that might be a good place to set up. And while we're walking, I gave one more bugle call just to see mm-hmm. where this bull was at. And sure enough, he's already closer, like much louder of a bugle already, and we could tell immediately this bull was going to come in to these calls.
Yeah, like the first bugle we heard when we first got out there, he's probably maybe a couple hundred yards away, but the second bugle, like she said, he was closer, he's probably right within 100 yards of us, like working his way towards where she was calling, so, you know. Had to find a spot quick and
yes, set we up. Got set
you
up
found
really
you found a worked up bull. That's what matters most. You worked him up.
Yeah. This other bull down to our right was also still bugling at us too, but the one to our left was definitely mad for sure was coming in. So yeah, we got set up and I did one more bugle because it was clear he was definitely coming towards us at this point. And so then after that, I just decided no more bugles for a minute just to see, and we got to get set up still. And so I was just to keep him coming towards us, did some cow calls. And then it had maybe been like 2 minutes we were set up, and I gave another bugle just to see where he was. And he was much closer.
Yeah, he bugled like probably about 40 yards away or less at that point. Yeah.
Yeah. That was just so cool to have an up that close bugle right there at us. And, you know, it was one of the first ones to actually answer my bugle call. Mm-hmm. So it was cool just to hear him answer.
So yeah, you just didn't know he was there yet. I mean, he was right there, but you just didn't see him yet, I'm guessing.
No.
Yeah, he was still in a lot of, and we're all in the wooded area, and it was real brushy kind of where we were at, so you couldn't see very far, but you could just tell him from the sound he was close, but
yeah,
he was out of sight still as far as through the brush.
And he hadn't bugled for a while, is why I gave another bugle call, because I was like, we don't really know where he is, we can't see him yet, so we'll just try one more. But then after I gave that, it was definitely no more bugle calls, because it was clear he was.
Yeah, like, well, now he knows exactly where we are, so time to shut up.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It was kind of
exactly. It's amazing how you can bugle and they can return your bugle 500 yards away and they will come to the log you were standing at if they want to come. It's amazing how well they know how to pinpoint that stuff.
Yeah.
It was crazy. And so, yeah, after I gave that call, it was not long after that I see these massive antlers coming through the trees. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is the biggest, probably the biggest bull we've seen so far. And it's not even the herd bull. It's one of these satellite bulls. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've got to try to get a shot at this bull.
She's sitting there and kind of in front of me, and I'm just trying to hide behind her on the ground, because she's, you know, she's the one that's got to shoot and do the call, and I'm just sitting back there, and I, like she said, I could just see over, like kind of around her side, I could just see the antlers moving through the brush, like she said, just these big dark tall antlers, and that's all I could see was the antlers, which was really cool. But yeah, he's just walking right towards where she wants him to go.
Yeah, and it was crazy. And he was definitely coming in to that call, like you said, right to where I was calling from. And he just kept coming and coming and coming. And then suddenly he's like 15 yards in front of me, facing right at me. So I couldn't get a shot. I was like, I can't take this shot right now. This is not going to be a good shot. Yeah. So, but he clearly seen us at that point because he was sitting 15 yards in front of me, which was so crazy in itself, and just staring right at me. And then he definitely smelled us and seen us at that point. So yeah. he was getting mad. He was making some like huffing noises, like he was about to run. And so I could tell he was about to go back the way he came. And so I set up and I got ready. And as soon as he turned to run, I took the shot. And then he kept running and my course disappeared. And so,
yeah, we could tell right away it popped, and we knew she hit him. Like, you could tell it definitely made the sound that she hit him. And I thought I could see, you know, an arrow sticking out of him, or I could see something on his side, but I couldn't get a good look because it was brushy and he right. was gone. But
yeah.
So yeah, how then, jacked were you? I just, you know, I mean, could you have lifted a house if you needed to? I'm guessing the amount of adrenaline going through your body, you know, this is day two.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Your third out of your fourth hunt that, what is it just happened? Your third out of your, did you see that?
Yeah.
Your third out of your fourth hunt that, you've seen elk. And you pull the trigger on this one. So you had to have been just crawling out of your own skin, I'm guessing.
Yeah. It was just unbelievable. And just the fact that it got so close to me too, and then I was able to get the shot, it was just unbelievable. Yeah.
In hindsight, it's probably good that it happened so fast because she didn't have time to get real nervous because it was
right.
We got set up and it was
we were barely set up, and then sure enough, here comes this elk. It was like there was no time to think. It was just
that's a good thing. Yeah, that's not bad. Okay, so you see him take off. Obviously, he disappears pretty quickly. Did you hear anything that made you think he was crashing, or you know, any initial signs that it was fatal?
Not really. No, and we had given it a couple minutes of just, like, give him a second to run and just take a breather for a couple minutes. And so after that, we got up, we started looking for the blood trail, and we weren't really seeing much of anything. We were looking and just big circle of where we thought.
We pretty much knew where he ran, and we weren't seeing any blood.
And I was looking right where I shot, and there was no blood anywhere. And so we were freaking out. At least I was, of course. I was like, oh my gosh, like, what happened? I know I was aiming at the right spot. I thought I was taking a good shot. Of course, he was starting to run a little bit, but I was like, it still seemed like a good shot. And so I was back looking at where I took the shot, and my dad and actually my uncle was with us this day too, which was great.
Oh, that's cool.
When we went up to set up, he had hung back kind of where we got out of the car and was kind of back there, but he could hear the bugling and he actually could hear the shot and the thump. where he was at, hiding behind some trees, but he came up there by the time we got up to start looking for blood, and he was mm-hmm. there, and so he had walked up kind of, there was like a little logging trail kind of in the woods, and they kind of had gone that direction, so he started walking down that direction. We were still back kind of looking closer where she shot for blood, and then go ahead.
Yeah. And then I was back there looking, and I hear them start yelling my name, and immediately I was like, okay, they must have just found the blood trail. That's good. And so I start, and they were pretty far away, I guess like 100
yards. I didn't know it was that far, you know, probably like 50, 60 yards or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So I started walking over to them. I was like speed walking because I was like so excited, of course, was like finally found something. And sure enough, I get up and I see my dad there, and he's got his phone out. And I just knew immediately that they found the elk because I could tell him in his face. And of course, he got a video of me walking up to it, and it was a fun video. But it was just so crazy to come around this corner, and there was the elk.
There he is,
right there.
So how far did he make it?
Yeah, not very far.
Not very far. Yeah, like I said, yeah.
Maybe 100 yards from where she sat. I don't even think it was 100 yards. It wasn't very far. Like, yeah, it wasn't far at all. You know, from when I've had whitetail bucks go further than that with a good heart shot before. So
that is awesome.
Yeah.
So you walk up on them. I mean, explain. Try. First off, day two, you dirty dog. Like, that is crazy.
Yeah.
Right.
Number one. But number two, try to explain to the listener what it's like, you know, because, man, I'm going to guess like 90% of our listeners have never elk hunted. And maybe have never even seen an elk in person. Try to explain the regalness or the sheer massive size of that animal when you put your hands on them. Like, what was it like?
Yeah.
I was going to say, the video shows our reaction because there's a lot of curse words coming out of our mouth. Just kind of like from the sheer excitement.
I think I was just like speechless. Yeah. I mean, I walked up and this thing was 2 times bigger than me and I'm 5'4". So it's like this thing was massive, and this was one of the biggest elk that we had seen this whole time, scouting and everything. And I was just in disbelief, you know, just so lucky to even get the chance to elk hunt, and then to get one this big to come in to the calls was crazy. And when I was taking the shot, I had barely had time to process how big it truly was, too, because it was like I just had to focus and do it. But then, yeah, walking up on this elk, and it was just so massive. I mean, even just standing and scouting and looking at them, you can't even believe how massive they are.
Yeah.
You just walk up and see those antlers hanging out there and the huge body. Yes. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That to me, it's, until you experience like the size of an actual elk in person, it's just hard to, and the bulls I've been around weren't even very big. You know, I mean, they were smaller than yours, and it just doesn't matter. They're huge. Even a cow, like, I mean, the size of a cow elk compared to a huge whitetail, she's twice the size of him. Mm-hmm. I don't think I think the whitetail you can see in my picture, he weighed about 295 pounds on the hoof. He was a huge whitetail, half the size of a normal cow elk. I mean, you know, just it's crazy how big they really are.
We saw those cow elk that first day and pretty close. And, yeah, they looked huge standing there. But, I'm sure this bull was bigger than those, and I thought those were huge.
Yeah, for sure. So, Anna, I'll let you answer a similar question in a second. But, Joel, like, explain, you know, Anna doesn't know this feeling. I don't think – Anna, you don't have kids, I'm assuming. I don't know this. But Joel, explain the feeling. You know, I can only imagine, you know, one of my children accomplishing something like that at a young age. You know, I mean, you're still in that father stage with her where she's an adult, but she's still your little girl, but she's not, but she is, but she's not. And so, like, explain, you know, the feeling you had just, you know, kind of thinking about the situation, even, you know, when you were maybe back at the farm just sitting there thinking about it all. Like, what did you feel? Like, how did that feel for you, man? I had to imagine that was just like the best feeling for you.
Yeah, it still just doesn't really seem like it really happened. Like, it was just, wasn't expecting, you know, I thought maybe she would get an elk probably during the rifle season. I didn't expect we'd get one during archery season just because she's never archery hunted and got to get them pretty close. I wasn't sure we'd get one that close. And yeah, so just to, the fact that she was able to call one in on her own and do all that herself. And yeah, just, and to keep her calm, to take the shot and make a good shot and get the elk. Like, it just, you know, I'm not sure I would have stayed calm enough to get that big bull when it was that close to me.
Right.
So yeah, just to see that she was able to do that. And, you know, it reminded me a lot when she was 13 and she got the big buck hang behind us. She got a big 8-pointer, one bigger than I've ever killed. And she got that her first deer season out and the same thing. She made a good shot and never really got that nervous, but she definitely was a proud feeling for sure that she was able to do that, and I was there to witness it.
Yeah. Well, and the nice thing is, like, any boy that comes around, you can be like, listen, my daughter knows how to kill elk, you know, mess with her and see what happens. So, but Anna, same question to you. What was it like, you know, experiencing that with your dad and your uncle that day? Like, what was that like? I mean, you know, it's gotta be cool, but it's gotta be even cooler that the person that got you into hunting was there by your side when you killed this elk. So what was that like?
Yeah, I mean, it was just super cool to have them both with me because, you know, I couldn't have done it without either of them. You know, I would never have been able to, I wouldn't have even wanted to go elk hunting without my dad with me, or he's the reason I got into hunting. So, you know, had he not shown me how to hunt and do all of this, I wouldn't have even gotten into it. So it was just awesome to have him there with me. And, you know, then having my uncle there was the cherry on top too, because, you know, he let us use the crossbow, and that was amazing in itself because I never would have even been able to do the archery season without that. So yeah, it was just so cool. It was just crazy too that the one day, the one hunt he went out with us is when I got the elk. So yeah, that was just super crazy in itself too.
That's awesome. Did you guys see, I mean, it was only four hunts total, I guess, or 2 days total. Did you see any other hunters while you were out?
No, I don't think we did see any other hunters, and it was, you know, archery season for deer at the time too, but yeah, we didn't see any other hunters. We were at, you know, we were kind of back in some pretty secluded public land areas, but yeah, just, you know.
That's cool.
Other hunters and
yeah. Yeah, some of the other stories, you know, we had, you know, well, like Gene, I was telling you about, you know, they ran into some other guys, talked to them about where they were seeing stuff, and that was during rifle season. But, you know, you really didn't have much time to run into other hunters. I mean, dear Lord, you didn't even give it any chance. You just, you're like, you know what, I'm going to show up, I'm going to show up, and I'm going to kill an elk, and then I'm going to go home. This is how I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
So what are you doing?
A couple people.
Yeah, for sure. What are you doing with it? Are you getting a mount? What are you guys going to do?
Yeah, I decided I had to get it mounted for sure. Yeah, so that mount should be back in the early spring, I think. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Are you doing a pedestal? Are you doing, what are you doing with him?
Shoulder mount.
Yeah, shoulder mount.
Yeah.
Nice. Ooh. Nice. You got tall enough ceilings for that, Joel?
Well,
not really.
We have a living room with some vaulted ceilings, but, you know, my wife's not real happy about putting it there, but it might have to go there temporarily until Anna gets her own place someday and wants to take it with her.
That's awesome. What about the meat? Have you guys already got to enjoy? Had you ever eaten elk meat before this? I forgot to ask you that.
So, I had. Okay. A little bit. Yeah.
So, Joel, you might remember, Anna, you know this now, but elk meat's amazing. It's super lean. The first time I ever cooked elk burgers, I ruined them because they don't look done, but they are because there's no fat in them. So what was that like? Like, what was the first thing you guys ate out of his meat?
What did we do? I don't know if we did
steaks, maybe.
Yeah, we might have some steaks, I think, first, and then some roast, and yeah, we've had a little bit of everything now, but. Yeah, we had to get another freezer to hold it all for sure.
Did you get him processed or did you do it yourselves?
We did get it processed. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's size of a cow.
It was 70 some degrees the day she got it, and you know, we're out there and we just, you know, our goal was to get it field dressed and get it to a processor and get it on ice as quick as possible because it was way too warm and fortunately it died close enough to one of the roads. We were able to get it loaded onto a trailer and get it to the processor. We stopped at the gas station and got some ice. And well, we had some ice with us, but we added more got it to a processor as quick as we could. Cause it was, like I said, way too warm to.
So did you quarter him up right there? Or did you drag him onto a trailer right there on that road?
Yeah, we were able to get the whole elk onto the trailer.
Golly.
My brother there. A couple other guys came to help us, and so we were able to get it.
We got very lucky.
Yeah.
I was going to say, dragging a deer sucks, you know, sometimes. I can only imagine dragging an elk.
Yeah, luckily for us, it died in a good spot where we could get to it. If it would have been one of those deep valleys, which are pretty much everywhere down there, we would have been quartering it up and packing it up.
But for sure.
It just happened to die in a spot we could get to it, so it was perfect. And we kind of been joking about that. We were out scouting, like, we were like, you know, you need to shoot one right here so we can just drive the trailer up and put it on there. And it wasn't one of those spots where she got it, but it was close enough.
Pretty darn close. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, Anna just showed everybody, like, this is how it's done. I don't know what the problem is, you know.
right, yeah.
You could do quick. Yeah. It's fast and easy. Just kill it next to the road. You can drag it right out.
Yeah.
It takes you. In fact, I should have had it done yesterday. I dang near had him. I'm dead on Saturday night. So I don't know what you guys are complaining about. Well, Anna Budnick, you are the very first. This will never be different because, you know, obviously at some point in history, a female has probably killed an elk in Missouri. But since the elk has been reintroduced in Missouri and we now have a season, you are the first female elk slayer in Missouri history. Congratulations, kid. That's awesome.
Thank you. Yes. Still unbelievable. I feel like I won't truly believe any of it until, you know, I get the mount back and it's just here. Like, of course, all the hunts is unforgettable too, but yeah, just.
Yeah.
It still feels like a dream, all of it.
I bet. Well, guys, that's all I got for you. Do you have anything you want to add before we hit the stop button on this one?
I don't think so. Yeah, I'll just,
I don't think so.
Just looking forward to eating more elk and seeing this mount come back and see how big it's going to take up our whole house.
Hey, you can hang stuff off the antlers for more decorations.
Right,
yeah. So,
it could be a coat rack if needed.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, Joel and Anna Budnick, I appreciate you guys coming on and talking about this awesome Tales of the Chase episode where Anna got it done, and that was great. That was fun listening to it, and I appreciate you guys coming on and telling the story.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us. Yeah.
Hey, no problem. We'll talk to you guys later.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
Right now, get up to 20% off select online storage solutions. Put heavy-duty HDX totes to good use, protecting what's important to you. The solid, impact-resistant design prevents cracking, and the clear base and sides make items easy to find, even when the totes are stacked. Find select online shelving and tote storage up to 20% off at the Home Depot to organize every room in your home, from your garage to your attic. Visit HomeDepot.com. How doers get more done.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.